I read in your book that the actress who was playing the love interest was distraught because they had these wonderful love scenes and she had fallen in love with Tab. And it was up to somebody to explain to her that Tab was gay.
Yes.
So who explained to her?
Here's what happened. Now, on the movie, now I'm playing my father in the movie, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm on the movie the whole time. And Chica Chiraud was the French girl. And she fell in love with Tab Hunter. And he was wonderful to her, but he was not with her at night.
Right.
See? And she didn't understand it. So my father asked a Chica's stand-in, because a Chica, you know, she was French and she spoke French. She didn't speak very good English. Mm-hmm. So she had a translator who was kind of her stand-in. So my father asked the translator to bring a Chica over. He needed to tell her, because the translator was telling my father that a Chica was getting so upset. She was so sad and she was crying a lot and she didn't understand why Tab didn't pay attention to her. He seemed to, and then he wouldn't, and all this kind of stuff. So I was there right near my father so I could hear when the translator brought a Chica to my father. My father was sitting in a director's chair, a tall director's chair, and I was behind him, but I could kind of hear what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking over my father's shoulder onto a Chica's face, is how it was. And I wasn't that close, but I, you know, and my father explained to her that Tab was gay. And that's why he wasn't paying more attention to her. And I remember listening to him tell her and watching the tears rolling down her cheeks. And it was, such a sad moment. So eventually, you know, I don't know that she ever got over it.
Do you, if we're talking about this stuff now, I think in the industry, even prior to Confidential, people pretty much knew. He didn't go to Henry Wilson. And I talked to a biographer of Rock Hudson. He wrote a wonderful book on Rock Hudson, interviewed tons of people, just came out this year. And it's going to be made into a major motion picture when they find the right rock. Now, that's not going to be easy. But you know Henry Wilson, who procured, and he was like Tab and what's his name? Troy and Rock.
And I know he came up with all those names. And
yes. And basically, you know, they had to put out like women did as well to Henry. And mm-hmm.
Well, I think most of those people in his stable were gay.
I believe young actors. Yes. And
I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying, you know, quite a few.
Right. And so with Tab, you know, he used to go double dating with Anthony Perkins. And you have to see the dates. They are so uncomfortable. There were these two girls, I don't know, maybe Natalie Wood and somebody else. And the guys are just like, you know, it's awful. Yeah. But it is well known among people. Did you know that Rock was gay? Did you know that?
Yes, we all knew Tab was gay and Tony Perkins was gay and Rock was gay. You know, it was pretty common knowledge within the industry. But
right.
The studios tried as best they could to hush it up because they didn't want to hurt their careers.
And you can't blame them because
But, you know, I must say, because now I didn't know Rock Hudson. I knew Troy Donahue a little bit. But I knew Tab pretty well because I did this picture with him. And he dated one of my sisters.
Did he really?
Yeah. As a publicity thing.
Uh-huh.
But Tab Hunter was wonderful he was a wonderful person on that picture. He was great to everybody. He respected everybody. He worked hard. I can't tell you one negative thing about Tab Hunter as I knew him. Of course
I love
he was
him.
Gay.
It's a big deal. You know. Did you see the wonderful documentary he did?
Yes.
And
I'm
also,
in it.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm in it.
I got a letter for you. And then he wrote that wonderful book. And you know Eddie Muller from TCM. He was
sure.
his ghostwriter. And I just love Tab. I just think he is such, and he was so cool. He looked amazing. He was like, I don't know how old he was. And he had his partner of all those years. And he said they wanted him to marry and to have a beard, but he just could not do it. He
yeah.
could not do it. So you have to give him a lot of props. And I like him. I loved him in his documentary, and I liked him so much in his book. And I loved him in your documentary as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. You were also in your father's... So this was his last film, the one, Darby's
Rangers.
That was the film, second to the last film he did.
Yeah, well, actually, it was the last film he shot, but because Warner was taking so much time to put together Warner Brothers Records, he released the Lafayette Escadrille after Darby's Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about what happened with Darby's Rangers was, in order for my father to get the Lafayette Escadrille produced, he had to make concessions. One of the concessions was that he would make a film for Warners, any film that they gave him, they would give him the script and he had to make the film.
Right.
Without objections. So they gave him Darby's Rangers, which he always thought it was just kind of a so-so war film. I mean, my father had made two of the best war films ever made, The Story of G.I. Joe and Battleground.
Oh, Holy Toledo. So I cried in both. Those were
as good as it gets.
Yes.
And Darby's Rangers wasn't a bad script, but it's not anywhere near the classy film of those other ones.
Right.
So my father had to make it without objection. And the story, I tell it in the book, but it always amazes me, and people just love the story. And it's really the truth. My father, when he was preparing Darby's Rangers, you know, and he was casting it and all, Jack Warner said, I will give you the lead who will play the William Orlando Darby. You can cast all the other roles, and I'll cast the one role. So he went through Charlton Heston and Burt Lancaster, and Warner's was trying to make a deal with them, and they wanted a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. And time was going by, and my father had cast the rest of the picture, and, you know, he didn't want to wait. So he finally decided, you know, I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to wait around for Jack Warner to make up his mind. I don't care if he said he has to cast the lead. He's not going to cast the lead. I'm going to cast the lead. I'm going to go make this movie. So he sent we were doing basic training. The actors were doing basic training on the back lot of Warner Brothers for a couple of weeks before the movie was to start shooting. And my father had done this with Battleground and The Story of G.I. Joe. So I'm down there. I have a role in the film. And Jim Garner and Stuart Whitman and Eddie Burns and all these actors were down there doing basic training. And so my father sent the assistant director down on the back lot in a limousine to announce to the Marine that was in charge of training us to form the troops. And he formed the actors. We were in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And the assistant director says, Wellman is not going to wait any longer. We're going to start filming. And he wants everybody to move up one part. Now, can you imagine that statement?
I love it.
And we're standing at attention, looking, kind of looking at each other, wondering, what the hell is he talking about? Move up one. And Jim Garner, who was next to me, said, well, if I move up one part, I'm the lead in the movie. And George Vieira, who was the assistant director, says, that's right. Get in the limo. Wellman wants to talk to you. And Stuart Whitman, who was on my right, said, well, do I take Garner's role? And Vieira said, yes, you take Garner's role. And I said, well, what role do I get? He says, you stay. The role you have. Eli Clatworthy.
How do you feel with that? I laughed at that, but I'm like,
well, so
geez.
A couple of people did move up. You know, not everybody moved up one part, but you know, it was pretty amazing. And out of that, look what happened to, you know, my father made stars out of some of these people. Eddie Burns, remember him, Kooky?
Yes, combing his hair all the time.
Peter Brown became a star in Westerns, Lawman, and of course, Jim Garner, my God, he became a huge star.
Wow, he had an amazing career.
So, I mean, my father knew how to pick them.
He did, because he picked a lot. If we go back to your earlier ones, this is one story I want to talk about wings, that really irks me. And I don't know why your father didn't punch somebody out about this. If he's going to punch, this is a good time to do it. They did not invite him, the director, because they thought it was going to be a bomb, to whether it was going to be a bomb or not. They didn't invite him to the premiere.
That's true.
Why?
See, he was well, all through the production of Wings, the studio was angry with my father because, for instance, they had so many weather delays, and my father wouldn't shoot. And then there were a lot of delays when he was having the leading men take flying lessons, and there were all kinds of things going on. And the studio didn't understand my father's reason for stopping shooting, not shooting all the time and waiting for this and for that, because my father was not going to shoot and do something that was not going to be good for
the picture.
He
wanted realism. He wanted it to really
hit home. At one point, Paramount was going to fire him. But then they couldn't figure, they thought, well, who could take over this film and make any sense out of it? Because they had footage and everything, but, you know, so they didn't fire him, but they sent their executives down to the location to tell him that he'd better get this thing finished or they were going to fire him, you know. And so these problems were going on, and my father stopped talking to the studio, you know, on the phone, or, you know, and he told two of the executives that they could either walk out, or they were going to the hospital.
I know that he's going to take him in the bathroom and beat their butts.
So the studio was not happy with him. He got the picture done. They were mad at him. So this is why, when they finally, you know, got the picture finished and had a premiere in New York, they didn't invite him.
Did your father ever tell anybody about how he felt about that?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And also, when the first Academy Awards rolled around, he was not invited to that.
How awful. I mean, petty,
petty,
petty.
And the picture wins Best Picture.
I know. And it made all the money back. It was a huge hit.
Oh, God. It was so successful. It played in release, major release, for two solid years.
Wow. And it was a $2 million film, correct?
Yes. It ended up cost, and that was probably the most expensive film ever made at that time.
I've got to see it. I can't wait to see it.
But the picture made a fortune, and I'm telling you, when you do see it, even though it's a silent film,
I don't mind that.
Made in 1927, you're going to go, oh my God, this is really now. You know, one of the things that's happened over time. At the time it was made, it's a buddy picture, say, with the two leading men. Well, nowadays, it seems like every other movie that comes out is a buddy movie.
Right.
But in those days, it was very rare. So that's something you have to understand. That was unusual for the time.
Yes, it was like, you know how they call things bromances now, really good friends.
Yes.
So it was like a bromance. You know, they were such deep friends, and I saw the deaths. Oh, my goodness. I will love this film. I have it. Now, Howard Hughes, what did he do a couple of years later? Didn't he try to do something like this film?
Well, Howard Hughes actually had he introduced himself to my father and wanted my father to direct Hell's Angels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And after Wings, my father did another flying picture called Legion of the Condemned, which was Gary Cooper's first starring role. And unfortunately, it's a lost film.
Wow.
But we can't see that. But my father did not want to go and do three flying pictures in a row. So he told Howard Hughes that he wasn't going to direct that film, but he helped Hughes out. He gave him the names of my father had 13 first cameramen on wings. And he said to Hughes, you need to hire these guys because they know how to film an aviation picture. And he gave him the names of the stunt pilots and Hughes used quite a few of them, which really helped Hughes in the production of his film.
But it was not as successful as Wings, correct?
Not as successful, but it was successful.
This is funny. Now, the one that I'm reading this thing, Fay Wray on your father. Fay Wray on director. I talked to her daughter, Victoria Riskin. What a great book she wrote. And
I know her. I've met her, and I did a book signing with her.
She's lovely.
She's a great gal.
Oh, I love her. We went on. We had a great time. And I loved Faye, and I didn't know Robert Riskin did all these things. But this is what she says on director William Wellman. William's reputation as Wild Bill wasn't apparent on the set. There were rumors of his wild behavior, but that made him kind of an exciting personality, I think. He was an almost belligerent director. He was going to get the scene, you know, and he was like a whole rooting section himself, vital and strong.
Yeah.
So a lot of people liked him. It's, somebody said every woman that he worked with fell in love with him.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, he was a romantic guy. He was, first of all, he was a good-looking guy. God, he looked like Errol Flynn.
He was gorgeous. And you know what? You look a lot like your dad. You are really cute.
Maybe when I've gotten older and he's gotten older, but everyone used to say I looked more like my mother when I was younger. But dad was, you know, he was a romantic figure. And a lot of, you know, he fought with actors, yes, but a lot of actors loved him. So that's just what it was. See, he didn't, when you think of the leading ladies, and he used so many of them, the ones that he liked were the ones that could hang with the guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Barbara Stanwyck was his favorite.
I love
Barbara
her.
Stanwyck.
Did you ever meet her?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you that story in a minute.
Okay.
Carol Lombard.
Love
her. You know, Loretta Young. I mean, what he didn't like were the actresses who were the prima donnas.
Yeah, Maureen O'Hara never wanted to work with him again. She said that he didn't want her to fix up. He didn't want her to do what? He loved Anne, what's her name?
Anne Baxter.
Yeah.
Yes. I tried to get Maureen O'Hara to do my documentary, and I actually had lunch with her, and I brought along, when I was on the set, my father did Buffalo Bill with Joel McRae and Maureen O'Hara.
Right.
And I was on the set. I'm, you know, 9 years old, and they took a lot of pictures. They dressed me up like Joel McRae, another with a mustache.
I love Joel
with
McRae.
A mustache and, you know, look with a Western outfit and everything like that. Took pictures of me sitting on Maureen O'Hara's lap. So I brought one of those pictures to show her when I had lunch with her to try to get her to do my documentary. And she was wonderful. I mean, she was just a fabulous actress and everything like that. But she said, you know, I didn't get along with your father. And I said, really? She says, yeah, he didn't like the fact that I wanted to look my best and I didn't eat a lot. And, you know, and she's going on like this. And then I started to get the picture of somebody who, you know, she wouldn't come on the set till all of her makeup and her hair was perfect. And, you know,
right. She
was not going to hang with the guys and tell jokes. And that's not her style. And so, you know, and my father used to kid her when they'd have lunch breaks, because she wouldn't eat anything, you know, and she's watching her figure, you know.
Yeah.
but anyway, so they didn't get along, and I couldn't talk her into doing the documentary, and I was so disappointed. I really wanted her in the documentary, and she just wouldn't do it. So I had a lot of people that wouldn't wouldn't do it either, that had problems with my father, and not just women, I mean men too. But that's just the way it was. There was a, you know, there was a camp of people who didn't like my father and another camp of people who absolutely loved my father. So
right.
There you go.
So what's a Barbara Stanwyck story?
Well, here's the thing.
I love her. She's my favorite actress.
Oh, she's so fat. You know, I've been doing events at her old ranch out in Northridge, outside of Los Angeles. And she, a ranch that she bought as a horse breeding.
Yeah,
ranch.
I read that.
And it's a wonderful, the home is out there. They're fixing it up and everything like that. And I've been doing events and showing Barbara Stanwyck films. Anyway, I knew she was my father's favorite actress. I mean, he talked glowingly about her all the time. And my God, he made 5 pictures with her. And, you know, she's just wonderful. So I really wanted to meet her. And I met her when I was a kid, but I wanted to meet her when I, you know, when I was a grown up. And I'm now an actor, and she's doing Dynasty.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So I go on the set, but let me back up a little bit. The problem with Barbara Stanwyck and my father happened later on, because when she married Robert Taylor, and my father was and Robert Taylor were real buddies, and they were in a motorcycle club together, and Barbara Stanwyck rode on the back of Robert Taylor's motorcycle.
I love that motorcycle club, and your mother joined as well. How cute!
Yeah,
is that?
I know. I mean, that's a whole fabulous thing. But anyway, what happened was when she and Taylor broke up. And it really was rough on her. She loved him. And she used to call my father and wake him up at night, and she'd be, you know, maybe have too much to drink, and she'd be crying, and, you know. And my father, you know, finally stopped talking to her because my father was married to my mother at the time, and he just didn't like the intrusion. And so it caused a little bit of a rift between them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. Now, I didn't really know the extent of it until I walked on her set. And here I am, you know, I'm now 21 or 2, whatever I am at the time.
Cute as a button.
I wanted to meet her, and I was looking for her. There was a break. They had broken for lunch. And I went to the assistant director, and I said, "Is Miss Stanwyck here?" And he says, "Well, she's back in the one of the sets." The room that they used as the library.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, could I meet her just for a minute? I won't stay long. I won't cause any problem." And he goes, "Well, let me go see." So he goes in there and he comes back out and he says, "Okay, come with me. Miss Stanwyck says she'll see you." So I walk in and the assistant leaves. So there's just Barbara Stanwyck and me in this big room, this big library. And I never got close to her. And I right away said, "Miss Stanwyck, I'm Bill Wellman Jr. I just wanted to say hi." And she just looked at me rather sternly. And I could, all of a sudden, I realized that this problem between my father and her extended further.
So unfairly to you.
All the way to me.
Yeah.
I wasn't asking her for a job or anything.
No.
I just wanted to meet her. And she kind of went, "Well, thank you very much." And, you know, but it was very much like, you know, okay, you know, goodbye.
Amscray.
Now, I have a lot of those stories of people that my father had fights with and everything that I didn't know about, you know, like Anthony Quinn.
I love that story. Tell everybody.
You know, those kinds of things. So I had to tread lightly when I ran into people that had worked for my father until I found out how they felt about my father. You know, I had to be careful.
Well, tell the Anthony Quinn, because I was so angry with him for that, to you as well. It was not right.
You know, why would they take it out on me? Anyway, my father loved the Ojai Valley Inn and Country Club up in Ojai, California. And he used to take the whole family there on vacations. So we're up there one time, and I know that my father, my God, my father made the Oxbow Incident with Anthony Quinn and also
Buffalo
Bill.
We'll talk about that movie later.
Yeah, and yeah. Buffalo Bill as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm there. All of a sudden, there's Anthony Quinn. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm really a big fan. Not just because he had worked for my father, but, I mean, I thought he was an unbelievable actor.
Right.
And I go right up to him, and I say, Mr. Quinn, I'm a fan. I'm Bill Wellman, Jr., and I put my hand out, and he looked at me and turned and walked away.
How old were you? Like what?
Time of day if he had a pocket full of watches, I'm telling you.
That's terrible. That was it. I felt awful. I really did.
So
I
said to my father, what's the deal with Anthony Quinn? That son of a gun, you know, on Buffalo Bill, he was afraid to ride his horse in a battle.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So we had a fight and blah, blah, blah. Well, then later on, I ran into the assistant director on Buffalo Bill. Mm-hmm. They had a punch out fight.
He and your dad?
Father. Yeah.
And your dad was
the crew broke it up. They were fighting because Quinn would not, in the huge battle scene in the movie. In fact, the battle scene in Buffalo Bill is one of the all-time great battle scenes of cowboys and Indians, you know, troopers and Indians. And it's been used in many films. They use it as stock footage. Anyway, Quinn is supposed to ride his horse, you know, and lead the Indians into battle. And Quinn was struggling to ride this horse. It was a very spirited horse.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I don't want to do it. I let my double do it. And my father said to him, well, listen, give me your, you know, Quinn was wearing a wig, you know, an Indian wig.
Mm-hmm.
He says, give me your wig and I'll wear your wardrobe and I'll ride your horse into battle. You know, so they started that way and pretty soon they start throwing punches.
And Anthony Quinn's, your dad's 5'9"? And how big is Anthony
Quinn?
Anthony
Quinn is 6'2" or whatever he was. He's much bigger than my father is 145 pounds, you know, but.
Bantamweight.
Anyway. So, you know, those kind of things, I can't tell you how many of those things have happened to me in different ways and different people. And usually, if it was an executive at a studio, I'd go back to my father and say, what's the deal with so-and-so? And he said, oh, that son of a bitch, he was my assistant director, but I fired him. And I go, oh, geez. So, you know, I never knew. And there were studios that didn't want Bill Wellman, Jr. around. But anyway, I persevered anyway.
Yes.
So, hey, I love my father, and I knew he was a maverick, and that's just the way he was. But, you know, I loved him.
Of course. I just want to name for our listeners some of the films he did, which I bet a lot of you don't know, because, you know, your dad did war films, he did comedies,
he did pre-code films,
westerns.
Here's some of the best known. You know, we started with Wings already,
right?
But how about Public Enemy?
I wanted to talk about that.
James Cagney. How about Call of the Wild? How about Beau Geste? One of the great adventure films. How about Roxy Hart for comedy?
Oh, nothing that made sacred. Me laugh so hard.
Nothing
I love,
Sacred with Carol Lombard is a fabulous comedy.
Star is Born.
Then you got the war films. You got
Star
G.I. Joe.
Born.
You got Battleground. You got westerns like Yellow Sky, Westward the Women. Have you ever seen that movie?
I love, love, love that movie.
Isn't that great?
It's a fabulous movie. I love it.
I'm telling you, you can take any genre and take one or two of my father's best films out of that genre, and you can compare them to anybody's.
I agree.
Anybody's film.
And he did some great pre-code. I like a lot of pre-code movies. But I want to talk a little bit, because I have a lot of listeners, and I've also had guests who love James Cagney, and they want to know, because I think it is the quintessential Prohibition gangster film. Of the Public Enemy. And this story is pretty well known, the fact that James Cagney was not supposed to be the lead. The other dude was supposed to be the lead.
Yes, that's true. And well, this is quite a story, because a lot of people will argue with me on this, but I don't know how they can argue too much, because James Cagney on national television, when they did my father's This Is Your Life, said on national television that he was forever thankful to my father for switching the roles and giving him the lead in the picture.
So that was in your documentary. I watched that.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, people look at contracts, and the contract says that Cagney was always the lead, the number one guy. But, of course, that was not the original contract. And don't you think they would throw away the contract when they rewrote it? With
yes.
Cagney now being there, of course.
Because I heard this. This was so, because this was Hedda Hopper's, the kid. He was going to marry her daughter, and they thought that this was good publicity, because at this time Hedda was just starting her big old gossip stuff. But the kid just didn't have it. Jimmy,
well, you know,
had it.
Yeah, I think we have to understand that my father thought this was okay. See, he cast the picture.
Oh,
he didn't have to do it that way.
Oh, he did cast
the first guy.
You
know, what's his name? Cook? No, what's his name?
Donald Cook was a brother. I'm trying to
think of his name. Yeah. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, my father liked him. He liked James Cagney a lot.
Edward Woods. That was his name.
Yeah.
Matty Doyle, right?
Yeah, right. And so when they had been shooting, my father's version was that they had been shooting a couple of days, and when my father went to look at the rushes, and he said, something's wrong here. You know, Cagney should be playing the lead. And he all of a sudden thought, I'm going to switch the roles. And and Zanuck, who was his producer at Warner's at the time, was in New York, and my father called him and explained it to him, and Zanuck said, make the switch. So he switched the roles, and they reshot a few things, and that's the way it was. And you know, but there are people who will write about it and say, you know, that's not true. But I'm sorry, it is true.
I believe you. Also,
and Cagney, let me go a little further. He said on national television what I told you.
Yes.
But also, when I produced the retrospective of my father's work in 1973, mm-hmm. I invited Cagney. He was living in Martha's Vineyard, and I invited him to come out. And we had a month-long tribute to my father. We had a big party at Chasen's, which was my father's favorite restaurant, mm-hmm. and we showed, 40-some films at a commercial theater. And Cagney came out, and he came to our house, and I spent quite a bit of time with him. And we talked about all this, and there's no question that the roles got switched, and Cagney told me. He's not going to lie to me.
Oh, I know the roles got switched. I've heard it from so many people. And did you love him or not? I mean, what a great guy
he is.
Oh,
he was wonderful.
Yeah.
He was wonderful. Yeah, he was an absolutely fabulous guy. I'm just like somebody you really wanted to spend time with. He, you know, no...
ego.
No, nothing like that. He was just a regular guy, you know, and a great sense of humor, and would laugh at things, and just, you know, a wonderful person to be around. No attitude, not
just,
at all.
Just love him.
The clock with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is me.